Hello, and welcome to the first ever episode of the Elysium Project podcast. I'm your host, Brian Johnson. This podcast was recorded May 5th, 2018. This being episode one, I want to spend today's podcast sharing my story of what brought me to create Elysium Project. This is a story which begins 12 years ago, and I'll be honest with you, I'm about to share things about myself that I once thought I would take to the grave with me. Like many of us, I've experienced an enormous amount of suffering in my life. It reached a point where last year it finally became too much for me to handle, and I began to share this story with others. This is when my healing journey began. By the grace of God, I had hope again, and today I've completely turned my life around to the point I can genuinely say I'm in love with who I am and the life that I've now cultivated. It is my hope that in sharing this story, it gives others the courage to come forth and begin their healing journey. You see, I've learned that one of the core principles of the universe is that there is always hope. It doesn't matter who you are, what you've done, or where you've been, your history does not have to define who you are in the present. Through this journey, I've learned not only the keys to self-mastery, but I believe I have the information which will help heal and transform the planet. So let's begin. 12 years ago, I was 21 years old. It was the summer of 2006, and I was still at the time living with my parents. They had gone to Europe for about 5 weeks, and while they were gone, something happened to me. Something that I had been planning in my head for a very long time. I began to nonstop clean the house, organize, mop the floors, sanitize, you name it. 12 hours a day, every day, all day for those 5 weeks that they were gone. I was nonstop cleaning. I know it's crazy, right? But obviously I was not healthy. Something was going on here. I didn't quite know what it was, but I mean, I had to do those things because I felt this crazy anxiety that if I were to organize and clean just in this perfect way, that somehow magically my life would be okay. But of course, that's not the case. So my parents came back from Europe and, you know, Mom, Dad, I have a problem. I'm not sure what it is, but I'm really messed up here. I can't stop cleaning. This is my life. This consumed me. This is all I wanted to do because I felt like I had to for 12 hours a day, nonstop, for those 5 weeks. So I went to the hospital. You know, I was having an anxiety attack and got to see a doctor and a psychiatrist and was diagnosed with obsessive compulsive disorder. Now, I've always considered myself a fairly intelligent person, and I really questioned their healing approach for me, their suggestions in terms of taking, you know, you take this medication, this drug, and you do this therapy and you'll be able to manage your OCD and you'll be okay. But it just didn't quite resonate with me at the time. I wasn't sure why. I just felt that there was more to it than that. So I started to go on my own healing journey, and I began to read a lot about alternative health and nutritional healing. And I realized in learning that there's actually a lot of science behind these alternative therapies that are not getting attention within the mainstream medical community because it's so propped up by the pharmaceutical companies. And one of the gifts of my OCD, which I would later recognize as a gift, is I have this insatiable desire for learning, for absorbing knowledge. My brain is just like a sponge. If there's a book about something and it's interesting to me, I'm going to read it. And I've literally read thousands of books over the last decade. But I began learning more and more about nutrition. I started reading Fats That Heal, Fats That Kill by Udo Erasmus. Diet for a New America. I started reading 80-10-10, The China Study. Just book after book of uncovering the profound reality that You are what you eat, and if you change your diet, you can significantly become a better person in more ways than just physically. So I felt that the approach for me was going to be a dietary one. And I tried that, and I was working hard at it, but you know, I had a severe health problem. I had obsessive compulsive disorder, and a part of my brain wasn't working. So for the next 2 years, I continued living in my parents' basement, extremely sick. I rarely ever went outside. I did not talk to anyone. And my life was just consumed with cleaning. I mean, I would walk around the basement with a roll of paper towels under my arm, and I would have to use a paper towel every time I touched something. And I had a very specific routine, you know, washing all my bed sheets and clothes every day. And I was over and over stuck in that suffering for the next 2 years, and I couldn't get out of it. And what I began to do is I projected the suffering which I had within onto the people around me. So my father, the rest of my family, my friend, whatever it was, though it was not my fault. It was the people around me that caused this. That's what I felt at the time. But as the saying goes, when you point a finger at someone, there's three fingers pointing back at you. And I later learned that these are things within us that we have to deal with when we're outwardly projecting ourselves and our suffering onto the world around us. It's ultimately us that we need to confront. So 2 years like that, and I wasn't getting better. I just decided, you know, fuck it. I'm done with this life, this city. I'm gonna relocate, and I never want to talk to anyone from here again. I don't want to talk to my family. I'm done with you guys. My solution is to geographically relocate, and in so doing, I'm gonna leave my problems here, and everything will be okay again. But I mean, that's a typical obsession, and then a compulsion to carry that out. So I relocated to a new city, and I went with only a new pair of clothes I had just purchased and money in the bank account in my wallet, which I had inherited because I wasn't working, obviously, at the time. And I went to this new city, and I tried to start my life over thinking that then I would just be okay. But of course, that's not the case, and the problems came with me. And for the next year in this new city, I was also just continuing to go back into my routines of the cleaning, the organizing. Just that took up my day. While I was there, though, I started working in a health food store in the downtown of the city. And about a year into living there, I realized that I'm not getting better. And I had a total breakdown. And you have to keep in mind, I wasn't talking to my family at this time. They didn't even know where I was. So I was really not doing well. And I went to a friend that I worked with and just broke down and said, I need to get better. I'm sick. So again, I went to the hospital. I was having a big anxiety attack. I saw the doctors and the psychiatrist, and I took their advice, and I took the medication and did the psychotherapy, and I got better. My obsessions and compulsions, I was able to be more mindful of them and with the combination of the medication and the therapy. So, you know, it does work. But there were things later on that I would have to deal with. This was targeting the OCD. There's still deeper things within myself which I would eventually have to confront, and I have. Now, while I was in this city and on this journey of recovery, in addition to the psychotherapy and, well, it was cognitive behavioral therapy and the medication, I really went on a deep spiritual search. I started reading a book called The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle, and it resonated with me very deeply. It was as if the words were awakening something that I had always felt inside but didn't know how to put into words. And I would meet with various people of all sorts of different religions at this time. I was in a Buddhist group. I went to the Hindu temple. I met with Christians and Jewish. And I wanted to know what was the core of their spirituality. How did their spirituality lead to a life of happiness, essentially? And I simply was wanting to learn all these different approaches. When I was in the Buddhism group, I was sharing my story one night, and I was sharing how through the intense suffering of my mental illness, how that often caused me to dissociate from my ego. That is to say, the falsely created story that we tell ourselves of who we are as a physical being. So I am Brian. This is my story. This is me. But on a deeper sense, that is not who we are. We are one with all life. And I was awakening to that for brief moments. And I shared that story, and after the meeting, a lady came up to me and recognized these awakenings I was having and wanted to take me on as her student. She was a Zen Buddhist teacher, and for the next year, I was grateful enough to have her guidance to do daily meditations and be able to observe someone who was trying to help fully awaken me and therefore free me of my suffering. And also during this time, I met a woman who would later become my daughter's mother. Yeah, I had a daughter. She was born in 2011, and she's now 7 years old. Beautiful little girl, just an angel. And so we were pregnant. We didn't have a lot of money, and we needed the support of family. So I came back to my original hometown, where I had 3 years ago left, hating everything and everyone that I projected my suffering upon. And I had to heal. I had to do a lot of healing with family and friends. I didn't realize the deeper meaning at the time of the reason I had to come back to my hometown, but I had healing to do here. And I healed the relationship with my father and my family and my friends. And interestingly, My father's now passed away. I found out quite a bit later that he passed away 7 years to the day that I originally left my family and said, I don't want to talk to you ever again. I'm done. You know, I hurt him that day. But while he was alive and in this life, we were able to come to an amends, and by the time he was at his passing, we had an amazing relationship. So in this, in I'm back in my hometown, and the relationship with my daughter's mother, unfortunately, did not last. And as I became, as I was single again, another problem which had been developing, stewing within me for quite many years started to grab hold again and cause even more suffering than the OCD did. And what that was is, listen, I was the first generation to of young men to test the internet out on. We were the guinea pigs. And to have all that access to the pornography and these dating sites and apps and hookup sites and what everything at your fingertips that way is not natural. And it really screwed me up when I was a kid looking at pornography. So one of the problems I was having when I was partially waking up and on my spiritual search is I would go out with my teacher and we would meditate, and then I would come home and look at pornography, and something just, you know, the two did not add up for me. And after the marriage, this only escalated into, well, now I can sleep with all these women. I'm just completely free to be as promiscuous as I would like. And that's gonna be fun, I thought. But not really. That constant searching outside of yourself for something that will, an external factor that will bring you happiness, which is what all addictions at the core are really about, that will only lead to suffering. And for the last 3 years of my life, I identified the problem myself 3 years ago, and I went into recovery groups. I knew I needed help. For the last 3 years, I had been working on the problem, but I couldn't find the answer. It was getting worse and worse and worse, and to the point that my free time was just spent talking to women online, and I was craving the next one that would give me the attention that I wanted. And it really got to the point where last year in 2017, I had had enough. I was not happy with who I was as a person. There's a very much a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde feeling. I had this one life in the day that people thought I was, and then at night, by night, you know, I'm some completely different person, and I felt a lot of shame about it. That wasn't who I wanted to be. And that shame kept me in a vicious cycle where I felt the shame, so to deal with it, I reached to the addiction, and I could not get out of it. And it just got so bad that by the fall of 2017 last year, the shame became too much for me to handle alone. And I began sharing my story with other people, sharing that shame. And when I did that, a pretty amazing thing started to happen, because I started becoming better, not worse. You know, there was always this fear. They say fear is an acronym for false evidence appearing real. There was always a fear that I didn't want to share these things. These were my deep secrets that I felt tons of shame about. And now here I am sharing it with the entire world online. I never thought this would be where I was. But I'm doing it because there's always a chance, there's always hope, and there's always a chance to change your life around. And I'm living proof that that's possible. And I am not that person anymore. That was me. That was something I used to do. And when we share these stories with people of what we're dealing with, we start to realize that, hey, I'm not the only one that's fucked up. Actually, we've all got these pretty fucked up stories and histories. That's part of being a human being. And from them, we learn and we grow and we become better and stronger people. So what started happening when I shared this story is the last of my ego and division between myself and others started to melt away. Because the reason I was holding on to these things was the fear of how others would treat me or see me. But When you let that go, when you let those things out that you're holding in, those emotions that you're bottling in, you're going to heal. And a lot of people are holding on to things that they haven't communicated with someone, or they're stuck in the past or the future. But what you have to ultimately realize is everything is happening within this moment. Where is the past and the future? They do not exist. They were always events which transpired in this moment. So wherever you are, just be fully present in the moment and use the past and the future as a means to navigate your life. But if you're stuck in it, you're the one causing your suffering. Nobody else. Nobody can make you feel suffering but yourself. When we point a finger at someone else, there are three pointing back at us. When we get angry at someone else saying, oh, I can't believe you made me feel this or whatever. No one made you feel anything. You put those thoughts in your head, and there is a way to completely liberate yourself from thoughts of suffering. For the last 3 months now, I've been in a state of, I tell myself every morning, I wake up, today is the best day ever. You know, it's an affirmation. And when you say it, they say, you know, you better be careful what you think and say, or it might come true. Well, that's true. So you put the right thoughts in your head and intentions out there. You keep telling yourself that every day is the best day ever. Pretty soon you're going to believe it. And for the last 3 months, every day has been the best day ever. There was a brief moment recently where I caused some self-created suffering. But when that happens, we just have to step back. We need to look within and feel that emotion, whatever it is, and then allow it to go. And I know it's really hard. Listen, it took me 12 years, but there's a chance to get there. So Elysium Project represents something that I've been working on during this healing journey of mine. I've always wanted to somehow positively affect the planet and society in my lifetime. But I firmly believe you cannot give something that you do not have. And for all these years, I've been suffering. I haven't been well. I've wanted to help people, but I myself was the one who needed help. 12 years later, I'm here sharing this story, and I really do feel that I've been preparing for the last 12 years for this moment and this project. Elysium Project is not about me. I merely founded this, but it is about to bring people together who are passionate about creating positive social and spiritual change in the 21st century. And I can tell you already that through the law of attraction, I'm meeting people day by day who are awakened and just we're really ready to change the world, because we will change the world. And here's the thing about ego. You have to have an ego. We all have egos. I'm Brian, and I'm building this guy up to start Elysium Project with confidence that I can change the world. And I believe I'm standing on the precipice of information that will do that. So we need to have that ego to exist in this world, but you need to be able to also disconnect from that. You know, I am that person and I have these goals within the material world, but I'm also something much deeper. And if I ever feel a sense of suffering, it's because I've identified too much with that person. And in the moments of quietness and solitude, we need to pull away from that and realize, no, we are one with all life. I have three parts of what I feel is a solution to healing our planet. I really do. And I'm saying this because what I've discovered on my journey with experimenting with the raw food community is that there's incredible science, incredible, groundbreaking. I mean, I'm talking about new insights into biology, which will completely transform the paradigm of our modern understanding of the origins of life. I can't get into this all today. This is a huge, huge topic. But I'm just going to share briefly a few of the things that we will be working on with Elysium Project to bring to the world. So it's colloidal biology, the study of the life colloid. Now, this is something that throughout the 20th century, various scientists were discovering using specialized microscopes, not the normal dark field, or they were dark, what is now known as dark field microscopes. But various people were developing these in the 20th century and seeing that when you looked at live blood, you know, modern medicine takes the blood, sends it away to the laboratory. By the time it gets there, it's dead on the analysis. But if we look through these specialized microscopes at live blood, we see that, in fact, the cell is not the smallest unit of life. And yes, this is groundbreaking, and it is scientifically provable. We can, the scientific process is, can something be repeatable? Well, yes, this can be repeatable through experimentation, and that is what we'll be getting out to the world to help change the paradigm of reality and understanding of life and the universe, because really this is unlocking the secrets of the universe. That's part of why I'm so confident in this project and what we're doing, is because we're merging science and spirit. We live in a world which is very too much reliant on science, and that makes a lot of sense. Science is a great tool to be able to analyze our universe using the scientific process. But colloidal biology takes that to a new understanding. So in colloidal biology, the cell is not the smallest unit of life. There are tiny, tiny particles that are dancing around, and they go through a process of spore, double spore, blood cell, body cell in a healthy blood milieu. In a person who's consuming unhealthy foods, a cooked food diet, the replication cycle goes through a much longer cycle. I believe it's 10 stages. Bacteria, mold, fungi, and yeast develop, and these are the chief undertakers of the body and all disease. And we prevent this by eating a diet of life food, which is to say raw food. However, I prefer to use the distinction life food, and this is based on the work of Dr. David Jubb, who you can read his book, Jubb's Cell Rejuvenation, if you are interested in the topic of colloidal biology. We'll have him on the show eventually, as well as more guests to discuss colloidal biology, because this is a huge subject matter. But if you read that book, which I read 8 years ago, and it's taken me 8 years to fully grasp how profound the information in it is, we understand that the key to optimizing our human potential is through life food. So uncooked fruits and dark leafy green vegetables, soaked and sprouted nuts and seeds, things that our bodies evolved on over millions of years of evolution, and only very recently we've been on a cooked food diet. And when you get onto that life food diet, your life will change. You are what you eat, and there we have the science to explain exactly why your body functions in ways that you could not conceive when you get on a life food diet. Your pineal gland will begin to awaken. Reality, you will step out of the matrix. But there needs to be more than just that. You need to have a spiritual practice. You need to have a backing so that as you're awakening, you know how to deal with these thoughts and emotions and feelings that come up. So you need some form of spiritual practice to keep you within the present moment and free of your self-created suffering. And the reason we need the life food and that in order to go forth and change the world is, as I say, we cannot give something we don't have. If we want to change the world, we have to empower ourselves to our optimum potential as human beings. And I'm offering those who are willing to listen the advice that I've learned on my own journey here. All that said is, you know, it's good to think about, but there's another huge problem in the world today, which keeps us stuck and keeps us asleep. And that is the practice of centralized banking. I'm going to run this down quickly. This is another thing we can't go into today. We're going to cover this and cryptocurrency in later episodes. So in the United States, for example, the Federal Reserve is the central bank, and it is not a branch of the federal government. It's no more federal than Federal Express. It's a private institution, and they loan the money which they create to the government with the promise that that money will be paid back plus interest. And this is how money is created, out of debt. So there's never enough money going around to pay off the debt. Money equals debt, and there's a disequilibrium between the money available and the amount of resources available. I mean, if you look in our Western society, just how wasteful we are. I mean, we're throwing out, I imagine, millions of tons of food per day. Meanwhile, we have thousands of people that are dying of starvation-related causes a day. That does not add up. That tells me the world is not working. And the first thing we need to do when we wake up tomorrow is say, how can I help fix it? So we have scarcity, which is artificially created, and it creates this never-ending rat race where we're having to work so many hours, so hard, just to pay off a fraudulent monetary system, which is creating money out of debt. And we have to get out of that. And for a long time, I did not know what we were going to do. How are we going to free ourselves from these shackles of modern slavery? Because that's really what it is. A few years ago, I discovered cryptocurrency, so Bitcoin. Now, it's a hard thing to explain in the short time I have here, so I'm just going to quickly run over it. But cryptocurrency is a ledger. So it's a database. It's keeping track of all the transactions. And it's run on computers, a computer server, more or less, but it's shared between all the computers that are using it. So all the computers have the exact same ledger all the time of the transaction. So you can't compromise it by hacking one computer, because all the other computers have that same ledger, and if one gets hacked, the system recognizes it, more or less. So we have a totally secure method of keeping track of our transactions now. And what money is nothing more than what we put our faith into. Realistically, the money we're putting our faith into now that the central banks are creating is paper and cheap metals for coins, and then numbers in computers. And that's all it is. So as humanity, and I think this is going to happen, I really do, if we switch over to these cryptocurrencies, these are not created by debt, not out of scarcity. And they're decentralized. They're not owned by these small, wealthy groups of people. Really, the technology behind this is called blockchain, and it's profound in terms of what it has the capability of doing in transforming the planet. So I'm going to have a lot of episodes about cryptocurrency, speaking with people on it, and just we're going to be watching it over the next months and years to see what happens. But I'm confident that it has a big part to play in this transformational process. So the main message today is I hope that in sharing my story, it gives others the hope to come forth and realize, no, you're not you don't have to be stuck where you are. There's a chance, there's hope, there's always hope. And we need people like you to help us transform the planet to a better place. We need each other. This is not something I can do alone. This is taking me 2 months to get ready for this podcast, and I've been working hard almost every day. I'm also writing articles on a platform called Steemit. You can go over there. I'm Elysium Project on Steemit. But we need to work together. And if we work together, I believe fully, we will change the world. Really, it's just about small incremental changes, both in your life and in society around us. And these small incremental changes lead to one big change. And before you know it, you're a new person and we're living in a new planet. Thank you for listening to the show today. Should you feel that our content resonates with you, please share this episode with a friend. We have so much content planned for the coming weeks and months. It's an incredibly exciting time. If you would like to become a patron, we appreciate any and all financial donations to help keep this vision alive. Please visit www.patreon.com/Elysium Project Podcast. Additionally, if you would like to make a one-time donation, there is a PayPal and cryptocurrency donation link in the YouTube video description. Thanks again, and I'll see you soon.